It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is one of the most important elections of our time.
Your vote could make things a little bit better.
That blue wave is going to hit a red wall right here in the Volunteer State.
We got to stick together. We got to move together. This is the United States of America. There's nothing we cannot do.
You need to all get on the phone tonight and call everybody you know. That's how close it is.
For the future of our country, for the cause of liberty, this is the time. And this is the hour.
To change the government, to make sure that it reflects our values, our aspirations, our ambitions.
We defend liberty. We defend the Constitution. Come and take it.
Do not complain. Do not boo.
We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down.
Do not get anxious. Don't get freaked out.
We are going to work, we are going to fight, and we are going to win, win, win.
Vote!
Sandy Rios with you. That was the montage before Martha McCallum's show last night, and it was so stirring, I thought you should hear it again. This is Election Day 2018, the midterms, and it is a crucial moment. There's no question about it. I'm disappointed, I have to say, that more pastors are not talking about this. That more Christians are not engaged. You know, there was this blowback from Christians being too engaged in politics in the 80s, the 70s, the moral majority. And so the pendulum has swung so that pastors somehow feel that this is an icky territory for them. And so they don't motivate their people, not realizing, you know, that they are, their children, their congregations are facing terrible issues, whether it's at school, the things that they're being taught, forced to believe the way they're being actually already persecuted if they stand firm. And yet pastors stay silent. It's amazing. And these are the kinds of things that are at stake in this election. Make no doubt about it. I hope that you joined me yesterday in fasting and praying. And if you didn't, then it's not too late to do it today. You can just miss one meal. You can miss all meals. You can fast as long as you want. But just praying that God would have mercy on our country. We know He loves us. He's a loving Father. And there's nothing good that He wouldn't give us, just like there's nothing good we wouldn't give our kids. But sometimes we know better what our kids need than what they know. And we have no assurance of today's outcome. We don't. And we trust God, regardless of the outcome, because we trust that He knows a whole lot more than we do. And yet we ask with the information that we have that He would have mercy. It seems so obvious that there's such wickedness that's gained so much power in this country, that there's so much danger, so much horrible, so many horrible things happening to our children, just letting them be prey to so much depravity. And we want to stay that. We want to stop that. We want to stop the lawlessness. We know that certainly is not at the heart of God. And so we ask for His mercy today. I want to play something for you that happened last night. President Trump was in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. That's the home of Rush Limbaugh. It's also the home of his brother David, who I know well. And so they went down to Cape Girardeau, and there was a massive crowd, as there always is. But in the midst of this particular rally, a woman fainted. And so President Trump was on the dice when this happened, and he asked people, he just stopped everything. And 8 minutes passed before this particular moment in time was over. While he called for a doctor, the president asked for people to pray. He says, say a little prayer. He's not eloquent in the language of the church, but he said, say a little prayer. And so as he was standing on the dais really quietly, and people were shouting various things, suddenly in the midst of the crowd, something broke out, and I want you to hear it.
that was really something. I want to just thank everybody for the way you behaved. That was beautiful. And that at the end was beautiful. Amazing grace. Thank you very much. That was beautiful. Hopefully she'll be okay.
You know, that's as they were carrying her out. And I don't think I'm mistaken that as you looked at her being lifted out from in the stretcher, she was smiling. You know, God is at work in his people. And that might not mean victory today over the things that we know are wicked. But it will mean that God is going to use his people, whatever happens. He is hearing the prayers of his people. So meanwhile, we roll up our sleeves and we work like crazy. All right, I want to go to some of the races and give you an update. In Michigan, John James, the black former Marine who's got so courageous, came home to take care of his family's business, has had great business success, is just a champion, it seems, on every front, is running to defeat Debbie Stabenow. And he hasn't gotten a lot of attention, nor has he gotten a lot of help, you know, a lot of money and dollars. And so, interestingly enough, a reporter named Brenda Battelle of the Huron Daily Tribune called to arrange an interview with candidate John James, because the polls are tightening in Michigan. And so this reporter called to make the arrangement to have a conversation with him the day after the election, but she did not successfully hang up. And this is what the call sounded like. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Brenda Battle. I am a reporter with the Huron Daily Tribune in Bad Axe, Michigan. Looking to set up an appointment with Mr. James for sometime on Wednesday for a phone interview regarding the election results. I'm probably going to send an email over to the info@johnjamesforsenate.com with some details. Thank you.
Man, if he beats her, Jesus. John James. Whew. That would suck. I don't think it's going to happen.
That was Brenda Battelle of the Huron Daily Tribune thinking that she had hung up. And, of course, what you didn't hear was the F word in front of John James' name. I mean, that's what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen. And so that's why many of us feel this is a real spiritual battle. I think there's no question about it. That was just wicked. Also, then in North Carolina, this is another race that we have talked about in the past, but not recently. And that is a former pastor, Mark Harris, down in Charlottesville area, Charlotte, North Carolina area. I used to be the pastor of First Baptist Church, was the head of the Southern Baptist Convention down there, and left to run for office against Dan McCready. And, of course, the issue down in North Carolina has been transgender rights and gay marriage and all of it for a long time. And so we've seen quite an upheaval. It's the 9th Congressional District. Mark Harris, now an ad has been released by his opponent, Dan McCready, that features excerpts from Mark's speeches. And so basically it says, God instructs all Christian wives to submit to their husbands. The title given to a woman is helper. If I were to define the word helper for you today, I would define it as the servant lover. All right, so what they did was they edited several of his sermons. In an ad, a young girl watches Harris' sermon through a window while holding her mother's hand. The text on the screen then asks, is this what we want our daughters to learn? Don't let Mark Harris take us backwards. Mark told the Baptist Press that those ads represent a sick abuse of sermon videos and take a message on Ephesians 5 out of context to present the phrase servant lover as though he suggested women are sex objects. Servant lover was an alliterated sermon heading corresponding to servant leader as a description of husbands. Harris said in no way, shape, or form did the term reference anything sexual. Harris said he intended the term to stress the wife's role of bringing love and nurture to the home. But this is where it is, ladies and gentlemen. And on the flip side, that's Mark Harris. And of course, it is the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina. In Colorado, the Family Policy Alliance ad is featuring Christian baker Jack Phillips, and they're talking about the assaults on Jack's faith and on all Christians in Colorado. And it could get worse, they say, if Boulder's own Jared Polis becomes governor. So it's an issue for both sides, undoubtedly. And, of course, in Northern Virginia, Dave Bratt is fighting a huge battle. The polls are very close, and we found out that Abigail Spanberger is a rabid pro-abort. She is endorsed by all the abortion professional organizations and is 100% all 9 months for abortion. So that's another wrinkle in that particular battle in Northern Virginia. On Stacey Abrams in Atlanta, and Stacey, of course, was featured on Lesbians Who Tech. That's not widely known, but I'm just telling you, her picture was there. I have it. She was, and I think it was scrubbed, and so that's why nobody's sharing that. She's a radical feminist. She's a radical leftist. She studied in the same school, as I recall, as Andrew Gillum. We're seeing an outbreak, shall we say, of graduates of that George Soros leftist school where they pretend that they're mainstream and they pretend that they're very nice, you know, and they just want the good of the people, especially black people, because that's what they're trying to do, make this a race issue. But and behind closed doors, they are rabid leftists. Here's an article. As a matter of fact, the Black Panthers marched for Stacey Abrams over the weekend. For 30 minutes, they had assault rifles and kept shouting, "Black power, power to the people." You may remember in Philadelphia, right when, in 2008, right before Barack Obama was elected the first time, the Black Panthers stood at a polling place in Philadelphia and threatened people coming in with billy clubs. The Justice Department brought a lawsuit against them because they were breaking the law. You can't do that at a voting place, not in the United States of America. And so the case was they had all the evidence they needed. They were getting ready. They had brought charges already. And when President Obama was elected and appointed Eric Holder, they dropped the charges. That's the reason J. Christian Adams left the Justice Department, by the way. He was a whistleblower on that. So now the Black Panthers are back. They are radical leftists. Remember why? Remember David Horowitz, the leftist, Jewish white leftist, who was very much a center of the leftist movement in the 60s, was affiliated with the Black Panthers. And one of the reasons he became disillusioned is because he saw them murder. He knew that they murdered people that he knew. So I'm telling you, this is a very frightening group on the left, and they're in full support of Stacey Adams, and she has not distanced herself from them at all. There's a new poll out of Georgia, and it's the Trafalgar Group poll. Interestingly enough, it shows that Stacey Adams is behind the current Secretary of State. She's behind him by 11 points, according to this poll. Now, that's amazing, because that's not what they're saying. This is another case where it could go well for the Secretary of State that night, or it could not. We don't know. Brian Kemp is his name. We just don't know what the truth is on this. Interestingly enough, I saw on Facebook a little notice here. Want to get paid to attend an Obama rally for Abrams? We need about 6,000 people to pack the Forbes Coliseum at Morehouse College on November 2nd. Former President Barack Obama is coming, along with many others. We will pay you $15 to attend this event, as similar campaign stops by former presidents by the former president have not been filled to capacity. And it goes on and on. This was sent out to Morehouse College, as I understand it. So you see how this goes. In Miami, they ran out of Miami-Dade. They ran out of ballots in many black neighborhoods because so many are going to vote. And so here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, fasten your seatbelts. And I guess you know you should vote today, don't you? You should talk to friends. You should make the case. Next, coming up, Trumponomics, economics in the Trump administration. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 23.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, the popularity of our spiritual heritage tours each year continues to grow. Those are our tours to Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips, but a lot of folks go on both of them. But the popularity continues to grow, and we sell out 2 or 3 months in advance every year. So we're letting you know when our June and September tours are. Just go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. There's two tours. There's one to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, and then there's a separate trip, but they're back-to-back to Washington, D.C., and to George Washington's Mount Vernon. So, if you want to go on those tours with us, just go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com, and check out all the info.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Back in the 1950s, the good people of Honesdale, Pennsylvania, erected a giant cross and star on Irving Cliff. Oh, it's quite a thing at Christmas time and Easter to see the star and the cross shining high above the downtown streets. But that longtime tradition is now in jeopardy. The Freedom From Religion Foundation says the cross and the star have to come down because the symbols are in a public park. They say it's unconstitutional and therefore against the law. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is a notorious group of atheists and agnostics who are waging a war to remove any Christian symbols from the public market. Place. Local residents are trying to fight back. Many have placed stars and crosses in their front yards, and so have downtown businesses. It's not clear at this point whether the city will capitulate to the demands of the angry atheist or if they will stand up and fight. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
When I walked into office 10 years ago, we were in the middle of the worst economic crisis of our lifetimes. That was the last time that the other party was in charge of things. I do think it's interesting. I just hope people kind of notice that every time there's a pattern where they run things into the ground and we have to come back and clean things up. And then, but Nevada was hit as hard as any place. Everybody here remembers. Well, not everybody, because some of you guys are really young. Those of you who are older than 15 remember, sort of. But because of the work we did, working with people like Harry Reid, who I love, we got the economy growing again. We started the longest streak of job creation on record. We covered another 20 million people on health insurance. We brought housing back. Here in Nevada, we cut our deficits by more than half, partly by making sure the wealthiest Americans, folks like me, paid their fair share of taxes. So by the time I left office, wages were rising, uninsurance rate was falling, poverty was falling, and that's what I handed off to the next guy. So when you hear all this talk about economic miracles right now, remember who started it.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. I'm going to have to interrupt the dear former president as he was speaking to a Las Vegas audience, and you've heard it many times since then. It is Barack Obama who is responsible for this economic boom. By the way, to be specific about the economic boom, 250,000 new jobs were created in October. A net 711,000 Americans have entered the labor force. Labor force participation rate has increased from 62.7. That's just in the month. In September, while the unemployment rate held steady at 3.7%, the lowest level in 49 years, This past week, wages grew at their fastest rate in a decade, 3.1%. The economy grew at 3.5%, and on it goes. But it is President Obama who was responsible for this, right? Well, my next guest might not agree, and I'm going to ask him to explain it to us. It's Trumponomics Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. It's a brand new book written by our guests Steve Moore and Art Lafferty. Interestingly enough, Steve is an economist, an author. He's been with the Wall Street Journal a number of years. He is now with Heritage Foundation. And I could go on and on, but then we wouldn't talk. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
Steve, make the case. Why isn't it? Didn't Barack Obama kind of hand that off? Isn't the reason why things have gone so well that that Trump inherited such a good economy? Explain that to us.
Well, if the economy was as good as Barack Obama says that it was, then obviously Hillary Clinton would be president today. It's obvious that the reason that Trump was elected because the economy so severely underperformed under Barack Obama. We did have a recovery. He's right about that, and it was a long recovery, but it was an anemic, flimsy recovery. And Barack Obama's last year in office, the economy grew by 1.5%, which is pathetic. You know, the economy was crashing towards a recession, and it's no accident. I mean, if you read the book Trumponomics, and by the way, Art Laffer and I were privileged enough to serve as senior economic advisors to Trump during the campaign, so we advised him throughout the campaign. You know, we always told him, look, if you can get the growth rate up to 3-4%, a lot of these problems of poverty and income inequality and the rising deficit and all of these other problems would go away, the shortage of jobs. And, you know, now we're growing at just under 4% over the last 6 months. So think about that. The difference between 1.6% growth and 4.0% growth is like the difference between going 16 miles an hour down the highway and 40 miles an hour down the highway. It's been an amazing resurrection, and it began, you know, there's a chapter in our book called The Light Switch is Flicked from Off to On, and that was what a small businessman told me outside of Cleveland, Ohio, when I asked him how business was, and he said, Steve, it was like the day after the election, a light switch was flicked from off to on, and I've had more business that can handle ever since. So, you know, obviously, and look, Americans understand that this is the Obama. We had an Obama weak recovery, and now we have a full-fledged boom. And incidentally, how did we get to this economic boom? You know, we used to always tell Donald Trump, all you have to do is reverse everything Obama did, and the economy will be just fine. And,
just
know,
to simplify.
Systematically reverse Obama's policies.
You know, Steve, I remember how bleak it was. Look, people don't. This is one area of life. Americans are ignorant about a lot of things, but I think the economy is maybe one of the areas where they're most ignorant. American history might rival it. But I do remember, and we saw with our own eyes, how businesses were closing. There was a depression that set over the land. It was so hard. We watched auto, you know, dealerships be consolidated. And you would drive through middle America. We used to all the way back to our, driving back from D.C. to Chicago all the time, which I'm sure you know that route well. Since you're a Chicago guy too, it was sad. Oh, it was so sad. And President Obama told us this was the new normal. Remember that?
You're exactly right. And by the way, you know, it is true. If you lived in Hollywood, or if you lived in Silicon Valley, or you lived in Washington, D.C., the swamp, or you lived in Wall Street, yeah, this was a great, great economy. It was a booming economy in those places. The problem was, in middle America, in states like Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Iowa and West Virginia and Kentucky and Wisconsin, states like that, there was no recovery. There was, you know, I'd ask people in the campaign, how's the Obama recovery going for you? And they'd look at me with a strange look on their face and went, what recovery are you talking about? We've lost our factories. We're losing our jobs. You know, people have to move out of here because, you know, factories have moved to Mexico or China or whatever it is. And, you know, now you go to those places and you just see, you know, how amazing is it? Today we have 7 million more jobs than people to fill them. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, I saw the president a couple of weeks ago and I had the occasion to talk to him for a few minutes. I just said, Mr. President, this is working better than even we thought it would. And he smiled and said, you know, it is, isn't it? And he said, by the way, you ain't seen nothing yet. So this is just getting going. This bull market, and I'm really proud to have been part of it. And the book is really the explanation for how Trump did it. He pulled off the impossible. And you're right, by the way. All of the economists that we used to debate during the campaign, all of them, All the liberal economists said it was impossible that Trump could do what he did. And they said he was going to cause a second Great Depression. Remember, if you vote for Donald Trump, we're going to have a second Great Depression. Well, we don't have a second Great Depression. We have the best economy in 30 years.
Yeah, in 2 years. In 2 years. I have to underscore that. Steve,
yeah,
I have a...
That's what I was saying to the president. I said, I knew this was going to work here. I didn't think it would happen so quickly. But you saw the turnaround. There's some great charts and explanations in our book that literally, the boom started literally 24 hours after the 2016 election. Remember what happened in the stock market when it went up 700 points the day after the election? Remember what happened with consumer confidence in the week after the election? It went through the roof and it stayed as high as ever. By the way, last week they took the latest reading, consumer confidence. Consumer confidence is higher today than it's been any time in 18 years. During any time of the Obama presidency, consumer confidence is higher today. You just see it throughout the economy. Wages are up now for middle class workers. That's something that never happened under Obama. So, you know, it's I'm proud to have been part of this. And I think, as I said, I think we're going to see the best is yet to come, as Trump said.
Steve, let me repeat. The new book is called Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. Steve has written it along with Art Lafferty, who he mentioned. And Art and Steve both have advised the president. And Art, of course, is not a young guy. He was around to advise President Reagan for both of his terms and Margaret Thatcher. So this is a guy who knows what he's doing. If you were to list like the guru in your life on money, dealing with money and economics, who would that be?
Yep. Well, look, Trump, I have to say, one of the people has asked me, how did I know Trump was the one? Because remember, there were, 14 Republicans running for president back, 2.5 years ago. And Trump was a businessman. And he's a can-do kind of guy. He knows how to build things. He knows how to turn around companies. He knows how to meet a payroll. And look, I'm not here to attack Barack Obama. I think he did the best he could, but he was a community organizer. He didn't know anything about business. He didn't know how to create jobs. Trump does, and I think that's the reason the voters took a risk and voted for Donald Trump, a guy who'd never been in politics before. And, he thinks every day, by the way, every single day, he thinks about those middle-class voters and working-class people who just never got a break during the Obama years, or frankly, during Bush's second term when the economy collapsed. And Trump always, every meeting we were in, he would always say, how is this going to affect, the steel worker in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, or the coal miner in Charleston, West Virginia, or the auto worker in Flint, Michigan? He cares about, that's why the left, they keep saying, oh, he just cares about rich people. No, he'd always say, look, the rich can take care of themselves. We like rich people. I want everybody to be rich, but he said, I want to make sure the middle class that hasn't had a pay raise in 20 years gets a pay raise and gets more money in their wallet, and that's happened.
Steve, I have to say to you, I have a far less generous view of Barack Obama because the way I saw that, it was an attack on purpose against the middle class, which is classic leftist ploy. I think the left, the middle class is the class that really resists. When things are bad, they're the ones that spend the money. They go out and vote. They go out and knock on doors. Yep. They're the people that actually, rich people don't do that, and poor people can't do that. So it is the middle class, and I think it was an attack against the middle class, and I think I want to make that clear. Now, I want to ask you something.
Yeah. By the way, I think what's so interesting today, today is election day, so I hope everyone goes out and votes. And, what's so interesting is that if you look at the counties that are the deepest blue, they're the wealthy counties. They're the very, very wealthy areas of the country. Trump has turned the Republican Party into the party of the working class. And the Democrats have abandoned those people. They don't care about coal miners. They don't care about steel workers. They don't care. They didn't care if the factories were leaving. They keep talking about how much they care about the middle class. They didn't. Every single poll for the last 5 years before the 2016 election showed that what was the number one issue for the American people was jobs in the economy, jobs in the economy. And yet, Obama was running around saying how great the economy was. It wasn't great. And that's why Trump was able to win the election. He turned around the economy for middle class, working class people who work hard and work 40 hours a week and were tired of getting shafted.
Yep. Steve, just a practical question, because I don't really understand this part. I do, but I don't. We've had a lot of tax cuts with Donald Trump's leadership and the Congress, finally we're hashing that out. And now he's talking about more tax cuts. Now here's the question: a national debt is just incredible. Was it $21 trillion? So how does that happen? How can we afford to give more tax cuts? Is he blowing smoke, or is this really something that should and will take place?
Well, the tax cut was I'm very proud of the tax cut because Art Laffer and I and my buddy Robert Kudlow helped write that tax plan for Trump, and it has been not just a success; it's been a phenomenal success. It's caused businesses to come back in the United States. It's led to this huge hiring boom in the United States. It's leading to higher wages and higher take-home pay. At the Heritage Foundation, we estimate the average middle-class family saves $2,000 a year. If you're making $50,000 a year, $2,000 is a lot. It's not, what was the word that Nancy Pelosi used? I think she called it crumbs. That isn't crumbs if you're...
Yes, crumbs, that's
right. For someone
rich
like Nancy Pelosi it is, but not for working-class people. And by the way, every single Democrat in the House and Senate, every single one of them voted against the tax cut for middle-class families and American businesses. So, whether we have another tax cut, the most important thing is to keep the current tax cut in place. Democrats are running around the country saying they're going to repeal the tax cut. Now, on the deficit, we've got a spending problem, right? Donald Trump, I criticize Donald Trump when he does something wrong. I think he made a mistake in not vetoing these spending bills. And you know what? He privately told me he wished he had vetoed the spending bills, and I wish he had. And I think in the next 2 years, you're going to see Trump vetoing spending bills that are way over budget and we can't afford.
Yeah. Yes, there's so much to ask you about. So we do have this $21 trillion debt, something, or 22.
Yep.
And so I'm curious to know what you think. What kind of a dent in that debt could all of these tariffs and the renewed trade agreements, which are more advantageous for us financially, what kind of a dent could they make in that deficit?
Well, the most important thing is we have to make sure the economy grows faster than the debt, right? Because if you don't, you get a debt spiral. And that's the first thing we told Donald Trump at our very first meeting, is that you've got to get the economy moving or we're never going to make any progress on the deficit. We're just going to get worse and worse and worse, and pretty soon we will end up being in a debt spiral and end up like Greece or Puerto Rico or, some of these, or Detroit, frankly. And so, the good news is the debt is growing. I mean, the economy is growing faster than the debt right now. We're going to get a lot more tax revenues in because we're going to see, as more people work and people get off welfare, and you just see that 700,000 Americans entered the workforce in the last month. That means more people are working. They're going to be paying taxes. Businesses are moving here. They're paying taxes. It's an awesome, awesome, situation. And the best way to reduce the deficit.
Hey, Steve, can I stop
Americans
you? Let me stop you.
Working.
Yeah, Steve, let me interrupt you. Do you have just a few minutes more? What I'd like to ask you about is what's at stake today. And if
sure.
there are any particular, can you stay with me? Okay.
Yep.
Okay,
happy
so the book mind. Is. The book is called Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. It's a joint effort between Steve Moore and Art Lafferty, who are arguably the definitive experts on the good things that are happening in this economy right now. What is at stake today as you go and vote? And should you be concerned about this? I think so. And so Steve will lay that out for us when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Rejoice, and again I say rejoice. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to the Morgan Stanley Bank, tax refunds in 2019 will be 26% greater than returns in 2018. In dollars, this is $62 billion more than last year's $235 billion in refunds that were issued as of April 2018. That is a total of $297 billion that will be repopulated through the economy, all due to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Say what you will, but President Trump has fulfilled many of his campaign promises. Record low unemployment, 4% GDP growth, a booming economy, and the latest news of higher tax refunds, this can only be described as more winning. I like it.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Today's election will have huge consequences for the future of America. Conservatives have the opportunity to maintain control of Congress and use their political power to advance President Trump's agenda, which includes respect for the sanctity of life, religious liberty, lower taxes, less regulation, a strong military, and secure borders. The Democratic agenda is fueled by a mindless hatred of President Trump and a knee-jerk resistance to everything he is for. Besides sheer hatred for the president, the left's political agenda involves open borders, amnesty, gun control, and budget-busting government-run health care. If Democrats take control of either house in Congress, they will spend the next 2 years throttling everything the president seeks to do through obstruction, investigations, and articles of impeachment. It is imperative that America's voters choose wisely. Let's pray that they do.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at redeemclean.afastore.net. That's redeemclean.afastore.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Hooray for President Trump, who has reimposed sanctions on Iran to prevent one of the most dangerous regimes on the planet from becoming even more so. Unfortunately, Mr. Trump's bid to apply maximum pressure has been undercut yet again by the swamp creatures in his own administration. Prominent among them is Brian Hook, a never-Trumper State Department official who incomprehensibly is now managing U.S. policy towards Iran. Hook has insisted on what might be called a Europe-first approach, a product of his reflexive effort to accommodate the determination of our so-called allies on the continent to help our mutual enemies in Tehran. Brian Hook's machinations rendered the maximum pressure campaign a medium pressure one. Waivers allowing 8 countries to keep purchasing Iranian oil and the mullah's continued access to the dollar banking system amount to life support for Tehran. Enough with the insubordinate subordinates. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Christmas coming. It is coming. No matter what happens today, Christmas is coming. Some things are inevitable, like what they used to say, death and taxes, but this is a good thing, Christmas. And if you would like to join us to help Samaritan's Purse get these beautiful Christmas boxes to children in 100 different countries. In fact, since they started, they've sent them to 157 million children around the globe. You get a shoebox, you pack it with stuff that you think a little girl or a little boy would like, and that includes toys and also school equipment and all kinds of stuff. A Samaritan's Purse puts information in there to tell them that there is a God, there is a Savior for all mankind. So that's the box, that's the gift. And if you want to help us, go to samaritanspurse.org/OCC, samaritanspurse.org/OCC. Collection week is the 12th to the 19th. There are drop-off locations just everywhere, so there are 5,000 of them. But go to samaritanspurse.org/OCC to find out a little bit more about this and how you can get your box if your church is not participating in it already. All right, Steve Moore is my guest. Steve has just written a new book with Art Lafferty called Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. We just were talking, Steve and I. I need to tell you a little bit more about Steve. He was with the Wall Street Journal for a number of years. He's a former member of the editorial board. Now he's a distinguished visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he's an advisor to President Trump. He is the founding president of Club for Growth. Steve, I did not know that part of your resume. Didn't know it. And also graduate of University of Illinois, which of course makes him okay by me. So, Steve, thanks for joining us again. And Steve, thanks for staying longer.
A pleasure, Sandy. It's great to be with you. And, you know, I think one of the proudest things that I've done in my life was really in late 2015, starting to work with Donald Trump on the campaign and serving as his economic advisor. And I got to tell you, he's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. I don't know, Sandy, if you've had the occasion to meet Donald Trump personally, but he's a great man. He's kind, he's considerate, he's personable, he's charming, he's attentive. You know, people say, oh, he's just, you know, like, does he have a big ego? Yes, Donald Trump has a big ego. But he is, he thinks every day about how he's going to help America, you know, revive itself. And that's why I love the whole America First ideas. It's let's put in every decision we make in government, let's make sure it's in the interest of American businesses and American families and American workers. And what's wrong with that? I mean, people say, oh, that's racist. How is it racist to be in favor of putting America first?
No, I always liken it to being on an airplane when the attendant tells you to put the oxygen mask on your face before you put it on your child's. Because in order to help someone, you've got to be healthy. So America has been without oxygen for a long time. We need some oxygen before we can help the world.
That's well said. And, you know, Sandy, you just said something very wise, which is, you know, we spend a lot of money on foreign aid and all this money that, you know, for all these international organizations, and they don't make a whit of difference. You know, what matters and the way that the United States helps the world is we lead by example. And we learned this in the Reagan years. Remember in the 1970s, I don't know if you're old enough to remember when we had 20% mortgage interest rates and double-digit inflation under Jimmy Carter, and felt like the U.S. economy was just going in the tank. And all along comes Ronald Reagan with this amazing, agenda. And in, you know, 2 years, he rebuilt the American economy as well. And once the United States got it right in the 80s, guess what? The rest of the world started to follow our lead. And that's exactly what's going to happen now. You see, the United States has the strongest economy in the world today. We are the envy of the world. It didn't take long, did it? And now all these other countries are looking at the United States and saying, gee, how did we do it? Well, we cut taxes, reduced regulation, we used our energy and our natural resources, and we put American workers first. And now all of a sudden all these other countries are doing that, and that will benefit their citizens as well.
You know, Steve, just another word about President. Yes, yes to that, of course. That's about President Trump having a big ego. He does. But I always say, and I believe this is true, that we look at what a man does and not what he says.
Yep.
We see him doing extremely generous, other-centered things all the time, helping people, thinking, as you said earlier, the middle class. He says a lot of things, but actually what he does is incredible. And so that's my ruler and measurement. And now I want to ask you something. We have an election today. I think you know that. How quickly, what's at stake, and how quickly could this all change?
Look, as long as Donald Trump is in the White House, you know, I think he's going to, you know, protect us from the crazy ideas that Pelosi is running on. I mean, and she's running on crazy ideas. They want a government healthcare system that would cost us. Remember, you were just asking me earlier about the national debt. You know, think about this. The plan that Nancy Pelosi and Bernie Sanders and the rest are promoting would cost us $30 trillion over the next 12 years. $30 trillion. You think we've got a debt now? Wait till that happens. And by the way, think about what that means to your health care if everybody is put into a government-run system. And by the way, under that plan, if you like your health care, you don't get to keep it. So that's number one. They want to repeal the tax cuts. I mean, that's crazy. This has been one of the most effective revival and plans I've ever seen. It's working like a charm. As I said to the president, it's working better than I thought it would. And they want to repeal that. They want to have massive new government spending programs. We can't afford that agenda. But the most important thing is people get out and vote for whoever they believe is best for their family and for the country. But I hear what these Democrats are saying, and it worries me a lot. I think that they want to move in a socialist direction, and they want to make us like Venezuela, where they're actually, you know, now eating the animals in the zoo because they don't have enough food. I mean, it's unbelievable what damage you can do in a short time with the wrong policies.
I was just reading in Venezuela how high the suicide rate is now.
It's terrible. It's one of the great. By the way, Venezuela is rich with natural resources. It has huge amounts of oil and gas and energy, and yet it's because they have a socialist system. And by the way, who's being hurt the most? The poor people, the middle class people, not the rich people. And so, look, I think Republicans are going to do fine. And the most important thing is we reelect Donald Trump in 2020, and we'll see what happens. It's not a tragedy. Sometimes I think, look, if Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker, and I think she probably will tonight, let the American people see how radical her agenda is. Let them see what these Democrats. The first thing they're going to want to do is want to impeach Donald Trump. Impeach him? He's our economic savior, and they want to impeach him?
Yes, I'm not as laissez-faire about them taking the House as you might be, but let's talk about
it. Hope you're right. Andy, I hope you're right. I think we're going to pick up seats in the Senate. And by the way, if you live in a state like West Virginia or Michigan, Ohio, or Pennsylvania, you got really important governor's races in those states. So, there's a lot on the ballot this year that is going to affect our economic future, no question about it. I mean, elections matter.
Yeah. You just wrote an article in which you talked about 5 races to watch, and I'd really like to know your thoughts about that. The Florida governor's race.
Race in the country.
Because?
Well, by the way, do you have listeners in Florida?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I know you do. So if you live in Florida, the reason it's so important is because Florida's had the best governor in America, Rick Scott. He's a superstar. He has made Florida the fastest growing state over the last 5 years. And he's a businessman. He's like Trump. He understands how to run a business. And you would turn it over to a pretty radical left-wing Democrat, and Florida is that boom is going to stop. I think it's going to come to a screeching halt. And Ron DeSantis, if you're a conservative, my gosh, he's one of the superstar conservatives in Congress. I love Ron DeSantis. And who controls the Florida State House has a big impact on not just Florida but the rest of the country.
All right, you also mentioned the Florida Senate race, which is Bill Nelson, the incumbent.
He's now running for the Senate, and that's going to be a battle. That's going to be really close. I mean, every vote is going to count in both the Florida governor's and Senate race.
I actually think that Scott is in better shape than DeSantis is, but some people are hoping that Rick Scott can pull DeSantis across the finish line, but we'll see. The lines in South Florida are unbelievable, and as you know, they ran out of ballots in Miami-Dade County yesterday in minority neighborhoods, and we know that the left is out in churches. They had this church thing on Sunday trying to get people out to vote, and of course they're making it a racist issue when it isn't. The economy is, when we're talking about that, is completely colorblind. This is all boats. Who did Reagan say? All boats lifted? Who said that? Or Art Laffer, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yes,
thank
you.
That certainly happened with Donald Trump. And incidentally, and this is the craziest allegation. I'm on CNN now, so I'm with fake news, and it's usually 4 or 5 against 1. And they keep saying Donald Trump is a racist. And I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is a party. I mean, this is a president who's created the lowest black unemployment rate in 50 years. This is a president who's created the lowest Hispanic unemployment rate in 50 years. This is a president who's created the lowest Asian unemployment rate in 50 years. He's increased labor force participation and wages for minorities. How in the world is he a racist?
Did they ever talk about Hillary Clinton just a week ago talking about the difference between the confusion of her interviewer over whether it was Eric Holder or Cory Booker, I think, and she said, Mrs. Clinton responded, oh, they all look alike. Anybody talk about that on CNN?
Right.
Speaking of racism.
Look, I mean, Donald Trump, and I was around Donald Trump all the time. He has many blacks and Hispanics, and I went to a lot of the rallies. Sandy, I think you've probably attended some of those rallies over the years. I mean, it's amazing how many blacks and Hispanics and Asians and people of color are at those. This is not about race.
No,
it's about making the entire country better and the greatest nation in the world economically and militarily, and Trump has done that.
Let me skip down to the last state you mentioned, which is Michigan. I really want to know what you think about this.
I love that race. Everybody lives in Michigan. I mean, this guy, Joe James, is
John
so
James.
Fantastic. I mean, I just met him couple weeks ago, I just thought, wow, this guy is fantastic. What a resume. He graduated from West Point, served our country in uniform, was in Iraq, runs a business. And by the way, he's obviously African-American, Republican, conservative. I don't see Oprah out there campaigning for him, do you?
No, I think she missed that for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, she's out there saying, oh, I'm not Republican or Democrat. I just want to see more blacks elected. Okay, what about the black that's running in Michigan who believes in free markets, free enterprise and business and equal opportunity, and she hasn't lifted a finger for him?
Well, you know, Steve, I will say publicly, again, this is like the women's movement. I remember when I was debating for Concerned Women for America as the president,
right,
and I would go up against the president of National Organization for Women. They didn't care about women. What they cared about was leftist issues. Yes, and that's what's confusing to people. They seem to be all about women. And
yeah.
Woke,
now, the
Oprah
other one
and,
I want to mention, because I know we're running out of time very quickly, is in Connecticut. You know, we have a chance to elect a Republican governor who's a businessman in Connecticut. Anybody who lives in the Northeast knows that states like Connecticut and New Jersey are financially bankrupt because of liberal policies. And wouldn't that be something if Connecticut, the most liberal blue state in the country, elected a businessman Republican as their governor? It may happen if we get the turnout in Connecticut. So if you live in the Northeast, and by the way, Bob Menendez, the biggest crook in Congress, in the Senate, is running for re-election. The Democrats are pouring money behind him, and he's been, before the Ethics Committee, he took massive amounts of money from donors and paid for play. Democrats like to say they're squeaky clean. Bob Menendez is the biggest crook in the Congress.
I can't imagine that the Democrats could defend it against someone who knew anything about their record about being squeaky clean. And that's really kind of shocking, but they do it. They claim things that are just not
point,
true.
Sandy. They don't care. All they care is about is power, right? They don't care if the guy's a criminal, for goodness sakes, as long as he votes liberal.
All right, back to my question. We got a minute left here.
Yeah.
What is at stake, Steve? Honestly, now you're pretty. You seem. I think they're going to take the conservatives are going to take the Senate, and I think. But I think there's trouble in the House. And we're looking down the pike a little bit. If the left should take power at some point, either tonight or later, what is at stake?
Well, it'll reverse all the progress we've made in the last 2 years. I mean, my one frustration, I wish Donald Trump and the Republicans were talking more about the economy. It was the number one issue for the 5 years before Donald Trump was elected. People felt the country was going in the wrong direction. Before the election, 3 out of 10 Americans felt the economy was good or great. You know what that number is today? Almost 8 out of 10.
All right.
You don't think there's been a recovery? Yeah. This is
yes,
amazing.
I do. All right, the book is called Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. The author, Steve Moore, joining us today. Steve, thank you so much. And let me remind all of you to vote today. This is the midterm. We've been talking about it for weeks. Today is the day. Don't forget to vote. Tell your friends and family. And we'll be back here at the mic tomorrow talking about all that transpires tonight. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.